Previously, last time we recorded was Friday the 25th, 2012.
Right, so who came up with the idea of which characters to use and which parodies, and how did you get away with it?
Yeah, I was very innocent. I was very naive at the time, and I had no idea that this. I didn't think this would even be a concern. If a company was willing to go with Rockstar at my hamster, I thought, well, that's fine. I'll just take the Mickey out of all these rock stars. I thought, wouldn't it be great if you could have a game where you could have spells rather than just picking up stuff and dropping it down here? You could make up spells and then you had to have a spell duel at the end of the game. You'd duel with probably Witch, was it? I can't remember. Probably Witch at the end, that you'd have to change your form into a creature that would be bigger or smarter or faster than your opponents.
Welcome back to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, the Retro Asylum. This is episode 59. I'm your host, Andy Godoy, and joining me once again is the legendary Colin Jones.
Hi, Andy. Nice to be back.
Nice to have you back, actually. It's been quite some time, actually. I think it was May 2012 we had you on last.
Was it really that long ago? I've been keeping my head down, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, what I wanted to let you know, Lee, it was a real pleasure. It was one of my personal favourite podcasts that I've actually recorded, and it was one of our most downloaded ones.
Well, that's great. Thanks.
So I just thought I'd sort of tell you that. Okay, so what I want to find out then. Now, we in the last episode, which I believe was episode 15, we talked about your career, you know, games that you started working on from the Spectrum days and so on, and we mentioned a certain character which was Slightly...
Yes, Slightly, my favourite games character that I was involved in, I have to say. There was something quite unique about Slightly, which I don't think I managed to tell his whole story, if you like. I think there was a lot that I still could have done with Slightly, but it wasn't to be 20 years ago.
So, I mean, if you just quickly recap, so what happened? Why couldn't you tell the story 20 years ago?
Well, I wrote Slightly Magic, which did very well, actually. It was very well received. And I began work on the follow-up. I think I actually completed the follow-up. I actually got paid for the follow-up, which is very nice. But the follow-up never got released. The UK software industry virtually collapsed. That was the sad thing at the time, was that... I'd originally planned a trilogy of Slightly games, at least, to be honest, but I was left in a very strange position in that I'd completed the game and I'd handed it over, and as I say, to be fair, I'd got my advances and things, so Slightly was left in a kind of limbo. It just wasn't profitable, to release, Atari ST and Commodore Amiga games at that point. Certainly not Spectrum.
Now, there is a real reason why we're mentioning this, guys. If you're not aware, basically, the reason why we've got Colin back on is Colin, earlier on during the week, he informed me that he is bringing Slightly back. He's doing a Kickstarter, so this is what we're here for. So can you tell me then, how did you get involved in doing this Kickstarter? How long have you been planning this exactly?
A couple of months ago, I actually got my act together, if you like. And I basically asked if I could get Slightly back. It had been at the back of my mind, to be honest, since... the 90s, it seemed such a shame to me that Slightly was in this limbo. And so after getting back into the games industry, always looking for something to do. And the idea of Slightly surfaced. And the more I thought about it, the more I wanted to get back to him.
Mm-hmm.
And every interview that I've done has talked about two games. Whatever I want to talk about, I mean, I want to talk about the latest game, but every interview that I've done has talked about two games, which is Rockstar Ate My Hamster and mm-hmm. Slightly Magic. Now, I was quite happy with Rockstar. I was quite happy that that was done and dusted. I think I'd done what I wanted to do there. But Slightly was a different creature. And I've always thought, as you create things, you sort of put more life into them than really is there. So I've always had a soft spot for him, and I've always thought of him as almost a real character. So a couple of months ago, I dug out my contract, basically, and David and Richard Darling had been very nice at the time. They were always very positive and very open, and I started reading through it, and I thought, well, there's not really any reason why I shouldn't make some sort of inquiries, and all it took was an email to Codemasters Today. Rod Cousins was very good, and everything reverted back to me, which left me in a very enviable position, because I had this Slightly Magic and potentially the other two games in the trilogy. So the first thing I had to do was refresh my memory as to what the game Slightly Magic was really like. So I put the game on through a modern monitor, and it was the first time I'd seen the graphics on a decent monitor, because I used to work on my male cathode ray TV screen, which was very blurry and wobbly. I remember the graphics used to wobble quite a lot. So seeing the Chris Graham's graphics mainly on a nice flat screen monitor brought home how good they were. I then started playing the game, and I think I'm allowed to say, because it's been such a time now, that the gameplay is pretty good. That sort of hit me and made me sort of want to definitely bring him back. But really, I thought that the first thing I wanted to do was to preserve this original 8-bit game.
Yeah.
That people still talk about today. And what was the best way to do that? There are certain things that I don't like about it. I never liked the ZX Spectrum attribute problems. I never liked this colour clash. And to be honest, when you look at the original game, it does flicker. And you get blank screens popping up, and then your graphics get redrawn. And then you get a bit of flicker when Slightly moves in front of objects and things. So it's not perfect. So I thought, well, why don't I just redo it? But why don't I redo it in an authentic way, which means taking the original 8-bit graphics, but of avoiding any of these spectrum limitations? To be honest, that would be the only way to do it these days. Otherwise, you'd be programming in limitations for the sake of it. So that's what I want to do. I want to take the original gameplay and the original graphics, and it's something I don't know how many other games authors have done this, to be honest, but it's sort of part recreating and part remastering.
Yep. And what machines, what systems will you be releasing Slightly Magic on?
Well, hopefully everything. PCs, Macs, Linux. I'm going for the Ouya console.
Mm-hmm.
Those will be the most authentic versions. Then the iOS and the Android tablets and phones, because I think it will work as a nice little game on those as well. There's a couple of things that I've got to work through on the tablets in that the actual control methods. I'm going to have to look at that again. There's probably going to have to be some sort of on-screen joystick.
Yeah.
Which is going to mess up the display, but we'll get through that. So basically, as many platforms as I can, and hopefully it'll be sort of future-proofed.
And, so how does it feel then, Colin, then, with the limitations of the spectrum that you had making the game and to the amount of power you can use now on any modern PC or Mac or even the iPhone?
I think it's worth keeping the original graphic. I mean, it's going to be the game that it should have been then.
Yeah.
Because everything is so much faster, obviously.
So is it like a direct port then, exactly like graphics? Are the graphics just ripped and put onto the thing as well as music, or is the music being redone at all?
Well, I've been in contact with Alistair Brimble, who did the original game music. Mm-hmm. And if we can get through the Kickstarter successfully, he's going to revisit his soundtrack. And one of the things he's going to do is re-record it using his latest technology.
Okay, wow.
And then I want to think about, and I haven't really decided this, I want to think about maybe including some of the original format soundtracks as well.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how that goes. We'll see what that plays like, really. But, I think we should do the music to the best quality we can. And it's nice to have Alistair on board for that.
How did that come about then? I mean, have you had much contact with Alistair then all the time since you sort of like stop programming these games on the Spectrum?
Well, you ring people up every couple of years to see how things are going. I don't know. It's like the people that I was very lucky to work with, some of the best people in the industry, and through working with people on a creative level, you tend to build a relationship which, unless you have terrible arguments, you never fall out of a relationship like that. So if I phone Alistair or Mel, it's just like there's no time passes. Yeah, and it's nice that people still want to work with me.
Now, the next thing I was going to ask you then, you mentioned a trilogy then. So what is this trilogy going to be like then? How is that going to work out in the story?
I'd like to know myself, to be honest. The first game is safe. That's almost etched in stone. And that's pretty clear then. Slightly spooky. The funny thing is, I was talking to Alistair about this yesterday, and he's got no recollection of the game at all. I've got a hazy recollection, and I need to find out, have I got an actual copy of it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I could lose sleep over this.
Yeah.
I've been at my attic recently, and I found my Amiga 4000.
Oh, wow.
As I recall it, there's a copy of Slightly Spooky on that computer. Now, I don't know if that computer has got any life in it at all.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't located my keyboard and mouse.
Yeah.
So I've ordered a keyboard and a mouse, so they're in the post. But to be honest, it's either going to be a 16-bit version, because I'd gone onto the 16-bit machines by then. To me, the definitive version of Slightly Magic is the 8-bit graphics, and the definitive version of Slightly Spooky is on the 16-bit machines. So we'll see how that goes.
That should be an interesting one, though, because it's one of those games that are retro legends, that games that people wish they had played and unfortunately didn't get to see the day of light. So can you shed any sort of light on what the gameplay involved? What sort of advancement did it have over Slightly Magic?
I have very little recollection at the moment. I know we had the graphics were great.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that we'd sort of mastered the 16-bit graphics, just like Slightly Magic's. For me, Slightly Magic mastered the 8-bit graphics.
Yeah.
Slightly Spooky mastered the 16-bit graphics. The game is the same arcade adventure.
Mm-hmm.
We took the idea of spells and objects. I moved forward with that. Now, I've got the ending. I remember the ending, so that there's something that says that that's a pretty good ending to me if I mm-hmm. remember that after 20 years. And I remember the introduction. Now, it's quite possible that this game is all a figment of my imagination.
Yeah.
And that it didn't actually get programmed at all, because it's a long time. But I have a feeling that it was a very good game, and I've got the ending, and I've got some of the puzzles. So if the worst comes to the worst, I'll have to bring forwards a new version of the game.
Yeah.
But I need a couple of weeks to see what the setup is, to be honest, regarding slightly spooky. And then there's a third game, and I've pledged to myself that I'm going to keep the title to myself until mm-hmm. it actually succeeds.
Yeah.
I've had this for 20 years, and the third game then is going to be a completely new game, and I hope to spend, through this Kickstarter, I hope to be able to spend then quite a long time developing this third game as a modern game, basically.
Oh, so basically the whole trilogy then, so the original one is 8-bit, you know, graphics and music and so on,
yeah.
And then the 16-bit one obviously is the Amiga-style graphics, mm-hmm. and then the third one in the trilogy will be using the whole modern sort of graphics and engine and so on.
That would be great, wouldn't it? That would be optimum. Yeah, I think that would almost be worth waiting 20 years to complete the trilogy.
Nice evolution of that, the way it would evolve, the way the characters and the way the story will go on and what you can do with more memory power, I guess.
Yeah. I'm thinking along the lines of Slightly Magic the Musical, to be honest.
Magic the Musical.
it's quite a thing, isn't it? To if this goes through, if this Kickstarter succeeds, it'll be quite something to be in that position.
So, I mean, how long have you been planning this Kickstarter now? Because, I mean, you called, I think you mentioned it, I think a few days ago, you emailed me.
Yeah, I'd say two months. It takes a while to find out how these things work. You start looking into them and you wonder, is it worth trying these things? And then you see, well, it's. So things somehow fall into place around ideas sometimes.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Kickstarter itself then? So how much are you pledging then? How much was it you want to actually make for the Kickstarter total?
The initial total needs to be £7,000.
Okay, that sounds reasonable, actually, you know.
Well, it's hopefully manageable. Mm-hmm. If I can meet that total through pledges, then something strange happens in that the OER people, if everything goes to plan there, they'll double that.
Wow, okay.
So then things start to fall into place. Then it starts to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
That certain conditions need to be met there, so that's nothing's taken as read, really. It's mm-hmm. all possibilities. Then, if that goes through, that would see Slightly Spooky released. Mm-hmm. Then there's a stretch goal of £12,000 in total, which doesn't include the OER money. It's not dependent on the OER money. If that stretch goal is met, then I can do the third Slightly game, which is what I really want to do.
Yeah. So what is it people get then, Colin, then, for what they put in exactly?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I've got to try and give people something. I've got to look at it from people funding it, from mm-hmm. their point of view. You can donate £1 and mm-hmm. you get very little, but you get to follow the updates.
Yeah.
It's nice that people can just sort of take part, to be honest.
Oh, of course.
Then there's a £5 pledge, I think. I'm just reading it here now. And for that, you get the game. You get the download on the PC, the Mac, the Linux, or you get advance notification of when the iOS and Android versions can be downloaded. So that's a pretty pretty good one. Then there's a £7 pledge. What does that give you? That gives you the music as well, and another game, Microdot Reimagined.
Ah, okay, one of the other ones that you'd worked on before, I think.
What was that one? That was good. That was an old Spectrum game written with the Quill Adventure.
Okay.
And then I revisited that earlier this year, and that was fun. So that one's thrown in there. Then you can get a real game, which I thought would be nice to have an actual computer disc in a sort of DVD case. That goes at £12. Or then I can start throwing in little bits and bobs for people, because I remember I used to love getting... one of the things I loved about Rockstar was that it came with these stickers and this little magazine and things. So then I can start putting in badges and postcards. And there's a few versions of that. Then you can start further up, hopefully again quite modestly priced for the pledges. If you want your name in the credits on screen, you can get that. And again, that's something that I could never have even dreamed about doing with the original games, is just sort of thanking people for supporting the projects. And then I've got an I Saved Slightly t-shirt, which would be very nice if that ever sees the light of day. And there was an interesting thing when I started looking at Slightly Magic. I looked at the game map, and what I realised was there was a room that I'd never used in it. If all the locations were to match up, that you could actually map them out, there was a spare room, which you just ignored in the game. It wasn't there to all intents and purposes. But I thought, well, what could I do with that? I didn't really want to change the original game, but I thought, well, I could. Why don't I let people have their own room? Each room... The nice thing about Slightly, the way that Slightly worked, was each room is a separate location rather than a scrolling arcade adventure. Each room is a separate location. So I thought, well, you could let people describe their own room. Let people name their own room.
Yeah.
Take hold of it, and let people get their own portrait on the wall as well. I could get people to email their photos. I could degrade these down to a really low resolution and wash the colours out and stuff. And I thought I would have loved, when I was playing computer games, I would have loved the opportunity to have my own room. And it's really close to the start, which is nice. So the setup's going to be that I'm not going to produce individual copies of the game for different people with their own individual room. I'm going to work it on a sort of code basis, that there'll be some sort of screen you can access, some sort of Easter egg near the start. And then you can type in your own personal code. You can send that code then to other people that you know, and you can swap codes so that you can see other people's rooms and stuff.
Oh, fantastic.
That'd be great. And then the other thing I started doing was looking back at how I used to design games. I'd draw my graphics on graph paper. I dug out a Slightly... And I thought, why not just get another new piece of graph paper? Why don't I just draw out Slightly? And I showed my youngest, and he said, "Wow, that's really good, Dad." So I thought, yeah, well, if people want, I could do a few of these, do some graph paper Slightlies, and they look really nice.
Yeah.
So things like that, then I managed to find a few very, I think it's for Rockstar Eat My Hamster posters.
Oh, fantastic. Which,
I don't know, they were sort of publicity material. I got them off Richard and David one day when I was up at Codemasters. They gave me a couple of them. I used to have one on my wall, and I just put them away. Luckily, I put them in a nice... dry, dark place, and they're in great condition. So there may be a couple of people that would like that sort of thing.
That would be amazing, actually, Con. How much will that go for then?
I've got it here. There are four, and they're £225, which is a lot.
But they're very rare, though, as it is. So wow, that's amazing.
And then you get the T-shirt and poster and what is it, badge and postcards and stuff.
That sounds absolutely amazing. So what I wanted to find out from you then, Colin, then what is your view on the whole Kickstarter thing then?
Well, this is quite interesting. I'd been hearing a lot about musicians complaining about Spotify and the internet is killing creativity.
Right.
Because artists can't get paid anymore, apparently, allegedly. They can't sell records. They have to reissue their best albums as very expensive box sets and things these days to make a living. And what I realized then was this Kickstarter idea is the antidote to that, really, that if there's an interest in something, if you've got a project that people are interested in, why don't you just go direct to the people who would like this and work with them to give them something which, as I say, you know, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, it couldn't have been done. So make something in a different way.
It's fascinating that, though, Colin, because your friend Mel Croucher recently did our Kickstarter himself, which was Deus Ex Machina, and he was successful in that. Did you get any feedback from Mel at all?
Yeah, he's given me some tips. I must start the project on a Monday. It must run for less than 30 days.
Right, okay.
It should finish on a Sunday. Oh, I'm probably giving away too much of these tips.
Well, yeah, if anyone ever wants to do a Kickstarter, that's how you do it.
I think he's writing a book. and there are things like that. And you must make a video. The Kickstarter tell you must make a video.
Mm-hmm.
Projects that with a video are more likely to succeed than projects without a video.
Right, okay, wow.
So I spent a couple of weeks making a video. Everybody's been very positive about this.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody said, what on earth? How do you hope to foster any interest in this 20-year-old game? Everybody said, "Yeah, go for it." And we think it should succeed. I'm unsure. I'm going to be losing a bit of sleep over the next 4 weeks. But
well, I'm sure you'll be fine, to be honest with you, because I think the amount that you've decided to sort of that you want isn't really, you know, like a crazy amount. Because I've seen some Kickstarters, and I'm honestly thinking, wow, they're really asking for a huge amount.
Yeah.
But the amount that you've asking for, I think it's really, you know, it's viable. People will be able to, you know, go and stretch that far, basically.
Well, I try to be realistic. You're starting with a game that you've already designed and you've got the graphics for. Okay, you have to pull them out of the original program, but you've got the graphics. So on the other hand, you don't want to ask for too little in that you'd be struggling. Mm-hmm. So I hope it's a reasonable thing. And of course, it could get the backer rewards could become. If I manage to do the trilogy, then the backers get the three games.
Mm-hmm. That would be fantastic. Not just having the first game, but having all three, you know, to complete the story. It's fantastic doing like that.
I think it seems to me that that's I've got a good feeling about it. If I could say that. Sometimes you work on something and you think, yeah, I'd be quite interested in that myself if I hadn't written it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's just quickly tell our listeners, this episode is going to be out on the 22nd of November, but the Kickstarter thing, when does it launch? On the 18th?
Yeah, Monday the 18th.
What time does that go up then? So we can be tweeting it and
promoting
it?
That'll be 1 minute to nine.
Right, fantastic.
I've got it in front of me now. I'm on my Kickstarter page and there's a big green button with launch on it, and I've got to keep my mouse pointer away from that because it's so tempting. Everything is set up. It's so tempting just to press that button now, but I can't do that because that would be going against all Mel's advice as to starting a Kickstarter, and that would mean that the project would finish on a Friday, which would just be totally irrational and out of sync with any sort of astrology.
Now, I do have to ask, though, Colin, now, once you've done this, and I'm sure it will be successful, and I'm sure you will hit your target that you're aiming for, will we see a follow-up to Rockstar at My Hamster?
I want to do a game in a very similar vein. I think that times have changed, and I don't think I'd have the guts to actually do Rockstar again and to offend quite wealthy rock stars. I'm amazed that the people who were portrayed in the original game have somehow or other, presumably they haven't seen the game, presumably.
Because that was one of the things, Colin, that when I played the original game, I was just thinking, what would these artists think if they saw this game? Some of the crazy names that, you know, there were names.
So I think things have moved on. I mean, I wouldn't like to stray into that minefield these days, but I think there are other targets, and probably more up-to-date targets, and because they were targets.
Yeah.
I love music, and I love the music industry, but I have sort of issues, and I liked to take these things out in this computer game. So there are new things to aim at. And I've got the title. I've got the idea. I think it'll work well as a game. Yeah.
I mean, we always envisioned. I've talked about it with the Retro Asylum team and community, and I've always envisioned the game sort of being like an X Factor style game where you get people coming in. It's like a management. You get to be Simon Cowell and Sharon and whoever else and do it that way. It'd be amazing.
Yeah. If I'm still around, there will be a follow up. Yes, but it won't be Rockstar in Hamster 2. But it'll be a better game. I mean, a better game and funnier. That'll be nice.
Okay, so going back to the slightly Magic trilogy, I mean, is there anything more about the actual games themselves that you actually want to tell us about?
I don't think so. I think the ideal situation would be, as we sort of talked about, the slightly Magic to be the 8-bit version forever, slightly spooky to be the 16-bit, although we don't know about that.
Yeah.
And then the third game to be where it should be, where it would be if it was written today, which it would be, with 20 years of pent-up gameplay waiting to be unleashed, all these puzzles and ideas.
It's going to be interesting, you know, basically to see where you actually take, you know, the puzzles, the story, and how this game evolves, basically. I'm really looking forward to it. Now, the last podcast we basically did a few years ago, I actually wanted to ask you a few things, but I've completely forgot to ask you. And these are the sort of questions I'll ask you now.
Okay.
Now, what I wanted to find out from you, apart from obviously your games, which are absolutely amazing, like Grain Chill, Slightly Magicka, and Rockstar at My Hamster, what were your favorite games that you maybe that you really enjoyed or maybe wish that you had created?
My favorite game, I remember playing it. Now, what was it called? It was by Denton Designs, and it was a sort of evolution type game, and you got to what was it called now? You got to be a creature, and then you could alter the DNA of your creature, and you could evolve in a sort of wireframe 3D world. Now, if anyone can remember what that's called, that was my favourite game, because I remember running around as a dog in that game, and the feeling of utter freedom was, it was amazing, very, very joyful it was.
What system was that again?
I played it on the Atari ST.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure I remember that one, but if any of our listeners can remember that one, you know, please feel free to leave a comment on the podcast page, but yeah.
I'll remember that in the middle of the night. That game.
You'll be thinking about it the whole night, not getting any sleep, and all of a sudden it will just appear and you'll scream it out.
Sorry about that.
That's okay, no problem at all. So what other sort of games did you enjoy doing then, or wish maybe you had written?
I enjoyed Id with Mel. I enjoyed working on that because that was such an offbeat game. What do I wish I'd written? I was offered a game and I wish I'd taken it. I can't really talk about it, but some of the games I liked the Mario games. I loved Manic Miner. I think that's probably one of my favourite games. Why can't we see Manic Miner now? Classic game. And you could not help yourself from wanting to complete each level and to carry on to the next. It was simple, but very well designed. I used to like the Attic Attack type games, and I remember one of my favourite games was Sandy White's 3D Ant Attack.
That was another one I was going to mention to you, actually. Someone recently did that on the ZX81 again. It's unbelievable. unbelievable how games like that are still being made to this day.
Yeah, that was a cracking game. Again, what's happened to Sandy? Why are we getting? I like the Dizzy games, you know. I like the Dizzy games. They had a certain innocence about them. They were well crafted as well.
Well, that's another thing. Now you've mentioned the Dizzy games. Obviously, Slightly Magic was very, very similar, but I thought it was a perfect evolution. It gave you the opportunity to do spells and do things a little bit different. It must have been a little bit sad hearing about what happened with the company of the Oliver Twins. Yeah,
It's not something you want to see happening, is it? It makes you think. I mean, hopefully that they'll come out of it and they'll get back on their. Get back on their horse and start again, but I don't know what the problem was. Presumably they were too big or something. I'd encourage people really to sort of be small these days, I think. Small and nimble.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be completely different, working by yourself and working in huge team with loads of programmers, loads of people, and a huge team is a completely different environment altogether.
You had good people thinking that they could do what they wanted to do. It always helps for a sort of creative industry to have the people who make things, the people who invent things, it always helps to have them fairly high up in the food chain. So you had people thinking they could do good, great things, and because they thought they could do them, they were allowed. There was a lot of focus at the time, and people were allowed to do what they wanted to do. Things weren't institutionalised. Big business hadn't sort of dictated that once you see a popular game that somebody else has done, you copy that and you get the graphics running a little faster or something. It was a hotbed. It was a hotbed of creativity. It was people in their bedrooms. Typing in, it's terrible to look back and type in, but I started typing in hexadecimal numbers, for goodness sake. What sort of person spends their spare time typing hexadecimal numbers into a computer?
Now, speaking about bedroom programmings and so on like that, there's a movie coming out, I believe. It's coming out in January, February, called From Bedroom to Billions. Now, I spoke to Anthony Caulfield, who's basically directing it and making it, and he's interviewed loads of retro legends from the past. What's your view and opinion on that?
Well, it's a period of history that, you know, we've got to start recording. Because some of these people, they're not going to be around forever. Great, and get a bit of attention to it as well. Quite an interesting thing came up the other day is the difference between the sort of retro games that you'd get in the UK and the retro games that you get from America and Japan. Mm-hmm. They've got a totally different feel about them. I remember watching a program about punk rock, which had been made in America. And the Americans have got a totally different idea of what punk rock is to what the UK, the ideas that the UK have got. As many documentaries of the UK scene should be made as possible, yeah, because it was unique.
I'm completely fascinated by the whole sort of British side of it, really. It's like you mentioned earlier on, a lot of people, when they think of retro, for some strange reason, they do think of the American or the Japanese, so they think of Mario or some of these other sort of games. But for me, it'll always be something like Dizzy, Jet Set Willy, Rockstar Wreck My Hamster. That's what it is for me, and I think this is what this film's convey, and it's nice because it's a story which hasn't really been told in that sort of media yet, so it's going to be absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I look forward to that.
Now, the other question I was going to ask you then, can you tell me five of your favourite computer consoles or systems?
Well, the Spectrum would have to be number one.
Which model would it be, though, Colin?
The ZX Spectrum 48K. I managed to borrow enough money when I was on the dole to to get a 48K. I managed to get the four. I thought if I wanted to write games, I'd have to go for the 48K version, because you needed to actually write the game and run the game on the same machine. So the Spectrum would have to be up there. I do have a fondness for the old Nintendo NES, I guess.
Yeah.
With the Mario, because I think the Mario games are so well constructed.
They're fantastic.
Great games. I just wish they'd change the flipping music these days, to be honest. The Amiga was a dream. And the Atari ST, I seem to remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, I seem to remember that you could just switch those machines on and they would be ready for you. I don't remember spending ages booting up. And that's 20 years ago, and then we come to Windows. So, what have I got? I've got the Spectrum, Nintendo...
And the Amiga, that's three, so you've two more?
I'm going to add the OUYA, because I think that's a dark horse as far as indie developers are concerned. I think we're going to see something quite interesting. I think all the interesting games are going to start life on the OUYA before long. I might be a bit fickle, but I think that that's got something going for it. And what would be the last one then? The original Wii console, because that was quite startling when it came out. I think it's a bit old hat now, but it was quite startling when it came out.
Well, the whole motion control
the
thing,
motion
I think.
Control,
it was selling like hotcakes. You know, you couldn't get one for Christmas. It was the must-have thing. It was, they really, you know, outdone themselves, Nintendo, really, with that.
Yeah, I think that was something quite different at the time. And we'll see, because it's quite easy to get faster processors and better graphics cards and stuff, but to get something that's a little bit unique is worth mentioning that. What do you think? Any other ones I should have...
Well, I mean, the ones that I quite liked, I always thought the Amstrad CPC 464 was a bit of an underdog as well. The Sega Mega Drive, again, they done really, really well here, Sega, and I think that's what really helped give them a big name was the 16-bit Sega. And I've always got a soft spot for the Philips video pack, known as the Odyssey. I love that machine. I don't know why. It's just, I just like the look of it, really.
Yeah, I did like Pong. That was my first experience of video games. I did like that, and I did like then what really brought me into computer games was a Texas Instruments console, and that was when for the first time I saw a little cartoon on screen that you could change. I saw a little cartoon that you the viewer could change, and that was a eureka moment. That's when it all began.
Well, are you still into gaming at all now, or are you just more sort of programming, or just look back onto it, or do you own many consoles or systems now?
No, I'll keep up to date now with, I don't want to play games where you're mowing down people in the street. I just find them a bit tiresome, to be honest. I don't want to be a soldier, I don't want to be a drug stealer or whatever. I like games with a bit of imagination. There's a few games on Kickstarter that I hope will see the light of day. That's one of the interesting things, if I could say that, is that you've got offbeat people again. Like myself, you've got offbeat people daring to dip their toe into the water and producing entertainments that they want to play. And they're looking at things in a different way. So I'm keeping my eye out for those sort of games. I think that the big consoles are going to open up as well in the next year or so. I think that there's murmurings that the Wii U is going to be attainable as an outlet for indie games, and I think we're going to see that. Particularly now, we're going to have the digital delivery, and we're not going to have to go through the stores, and we're not going to have to suffer the high prices that all that sort of malarkey causes. So yeah, I'm actually more interested in what we call video games than I have been for 20 years. I think we're going to see something. I think we're going to see a lot of very interesting games in the next couple of years.
Okay then, Colin, I think what we'll do now, we'll round this up then. So have you got any shout-outs, or would like to thank anyone out there?
I should like to thank all the people that have been involved in the retro industry, because they've been sort of carrying some sort of torch, if you like, that I was allowed to run off screaming when the industry collapsed and hide away for 20 years. And then I was... I liked to come back then, and people would ask me questions, and they'd still be interested. And that was very nice to know. That was the first sort of step to got me back into games. So
So where can people find you on Twitter then?
I'll probably be Potassium Frog on Twitter, won't I? I'll probably be Potassium Frog. Yeah.
Okay, and you mentioned you had a website as well.
I've set up slightlymagic.co.uk. At the moment, I've got no idea how to link to my Kickstarter page because it's not live. But when that's live, I guess you can just search through Kickstarter for Slightly Magic. I imagine there'd be much else there that would be popping up under that name. Or you could go to slightlymagic.co.uk, and there'll be a link there for Monday. From 1 minute to nine on Monday.
We'll be sort of looking at our watches, Colin.
Of course, unless I sleep late.
Now, everyone will set their alarm clocks just on time, Colin. They'll wake up 5 minutes early.
Oh, yeah, you know what's going to happen? I'm going to press that launch button, and then it's going to take me to another screen, and I've got to fill in a questionnaire or something. It's going to be, it's going to be Thursday before it's open.
Okay, so what I'd like to do now then is thank Colin for coming back on the show. It's been a real pleasure. It's a second time round, and I've got to say it's been fantastic getting you on the show, and I'm sure all our listeners are going to get behind the project. It's really exciting. If you're a big fan of these sort of like Dizzy style games, which is Slightly Magic, you've got to check out this Kickstarter. Thank you very much, Colin, for coming back on the show.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
All right, you take care.
And you. Bye. My hamster.